The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans across South Australia. The program received funding through the Veteran and Community Grants stream in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch and the Emu Tree, and was produced by Christian Teusner. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit www.theemutree.com. Today is the 18th of May, 2020. Yeah. I'm in Burra, and here I'm with Leonard Pendrell Bentz, born on the 9th of the 5th, 1923. Thank you very much, Len, for talking with me.
That's all right.
Can I ask you, just to start things off, can you tell me a little bit about where you're from and about your childhood, please?
Where I'm from? Well, I was born here in Burra, so I'm from Burra. And, well, I went to the Burra school until the first year in high school. Then my father managed to get the money to send me down to boarding school, St Peter's College. I was down there for 2 years, 2.5 years, which did me a lot of good, I think.
Do you have some fond memories of St Peter's?
Yes, I have. Yes, they try to give you, as a new fella, they put you under a lot of stress, you know. They think they can make you clean their military belt. We used to have the military then, you know. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. So I got in a few fights there when I was young, but I enjoyed the life, I really did. After a few weeks, I enjoyed it. I was good at sport. I love sport, so I was quite happy there. I can't say I was good at every subject, but...
As a boarder at St. Peter's College?
Yeah.
Sports was one thing, but what would you do for entertainment?
Entertainment?
How would you entertain yourselves? Yeah. What would you do?
Sport, I love running. I was good at running at 100 yards and 220 yards. I was good at tennis. I got into the house tennis team. Well, I suppose you could say I was good at everything.
Lucky you. So you must have been a pretty fit young man.
Yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah, I loved the exercise. I loved running. I was running every night. I'd ran there. Yeah, I loved that. And tennis, I loved the tennis. And I'd go off sometimes to North Adelaide to play golf, have a game of golf. Yeah. I wasn't good at football. I wasn't very good at that, but I tried.
Now, what about after school? When you finished at secondary school, what did you move on to do after that then?
Well, after I left, I came back here. I left halfway through leaving. I came back here to Burra. I didn't know what I wanted to do. The local bank manager rang up my father, asked, would Len be interested in working in the bank, because they were short staffed because of the beginning of the war. It was the last thing I wanted, go in the bank, but I did go for 10 months, and then I had a fight with the teller behind the counter because he's making me do things that weren't my job. I had him on the floor sitting on his chest, and the bank manager came in, looked over the top and just grinned and went away. And after that, I won't tell you why, but after that I told the manager that I'm leaving. I had enough of it. Yeah, I didn't like it. Yeah. So then I went off on my own to Sydney. I got several jobs there, a clothing factory. The people I knew quite well because my father used to deal from them. Anyhow, they told me that you wouldn't be able to stay there because they were making the factory turn into army military clothes and things like that. So I left there, did a bit of massaging. Then I went up to the station. I saw an ad in the paper, wanted someone to go up to a still in Pillegap North. And I went and saw the chap, put over a lot of stories, and I got the job. I went up to Pillegap as a Jack. That's right. That's what I was doing, Jackaroo. But you had to. There was a lot of real cowboys then, half black fellas and half white, and very good horse riders. You had to do what they said. I had to break in a horse. Well, I could ride a horse, but I wasn't that keen on breaking in a horse. Things like that. If you didn't do them, you weren't. They didn't think much of you. Do you know what I mean? So I got through that. I quite liked it. But I then got. I had put my name down for the Air Force, and while I was up there, after 10 months, I got a call saying that I could come in. I was 18 then, so I was old enough to go. So I joined up in Sydney and got them to transfer me to Adelaide, which was good. Now, I could tell you a long story. It would go on and on. I don't know. We had inspections, like health inspections and different things, little mathematics tests. And then we went to, I'll cut everything short, went to Victor Harbour. That was the first bit, living in camps, 8 to a tent. I didn't mind that because I was used to roughing it, but some chaps didn't like it at all. Living, you were on the palliasse, the straw palliasses, almost touching each other, you know, something like that. They always pinched your washing on the line, so you had to pinch somebody else's to get by. But then I quite liked there. We went through, had to go through quite a lot of school classes, mathematics and things like that, which I was quite good at that stage. And then cutting it short, they put a list up after 3 months, who was going to be a pilot, who's going to be a navigator, who's going to be a gunner, and that. So mine came up as pilot, and I thought, oh, that's marvellous. Everyone wanted to be a pilot. So we went to Parafield then. Everything seemed to be in 3 months. Went to Parafield and just to fly Tiger Moss, and I liked that, and I was good at it. Then I wanted to be a fighter pilot, so I was posted to Deniliquin north of New South Wales. It's a strange thing, I can't really tell you. The CO there was a real bastard. He saw us in the hall and said, my name is... Anyhow, he said if you didn't toe the line, you'd be out. Well, the thing was, he put the whole lot of us, 18, out, which was ridiculous. In other words, they said we couldn't fly. Well, we had a chap in our squadron whose father was the editor of the newspaper, New South Wales, and he knew the Air Commodore very well. So the Air Commodore came down, heard our story, and put us all back on course. But there wasn't... room to put us on fighters. If we wanted to still fly, we had to go down to Malala to fly Ansons, Avro Ansons. We were pretty disappointed at that, but in the end I quite liked it. I got my wings at Malala. A lot of stories which I won't tell you happened there. you don't want to hear those sort of stories.
Anything you'd like to share? It's totally up to you.
So well, it's up to you. I'll tell you two of them, but you can cut them out if you're like, oh, the first one's not all right. I had to fly, so they used to have parachutes on a rack up high, and they have chest parachutes. So I pulled one down, and it was full of grey blankets. The ground staff who did take the silk for their girlfriends or wives. Now, if I jumped out and see the blanket, the other thing was... A chap, he liked the girls a bit. He asked me if I could take him up. I said, I'm not allowed to. I've got to sign up. Oh, come on. So in the end, I did. He took a little waff up, and there was a little astrodome at the back of a Anson, and he took the girl in there. So you know what was going on. I knew what was going on. So I waited a while. Then I put the plane in... The girl was all sick all over him. he wasn't very happy with this. that's it.
That's classical.
I did win the boxing tournaments, boxing and wrestling at each place. I won the boxing in my middleweight then, boxing. I was quite good at that because the way I boarded a chap was an ex-fighter and he used to teach me, and I was quite good at that. So then I got my wings at Malala, and then I was on leave, and then I went to...
Sorry. Can I just ask something? Sorry, what age were you when you got your wings?
I was 18. There was a place up on the hills, I forget, where we all had to go, waiting for a ship. Back as I can think of it. And then 3 weeks went by, I was getting bored out of my mind. And so I thought, oh, my God, there's a dance in Borough that Friday night. I'll catch the train. It worked out well. Catch the train, come back the next morning on the train, and I'm right. I got back to the camp, nobody there. I thought, where are they? They'd all gone on the ship overseas. I was left out. Oh, so that's a big no-no. They didn't know what to do with me. But they sent me down to Point Cook to do... As a punishment, to do blind flying two times, two courses of it. Well, that is so boring. We're on the twin engine Oxfords. You have an instructor with you, and I'm blindfolded, coming into land. You hear di-di-di-dits on one side, da-da-da's on the other. When they converge, you land. You know what I mean? But we didn't actually land. We're over the. We just scoot off again and do it again. Oh, it's so boring.
Touch and goes.
Oh, the instructor, he just sat back reading poetry. It was a great one for poetry. Anyhow, after a couple of months' punishment, they let me fly on my own for the last day, and you weren't allowed to do low flying. Well, when they say you're not allowed, that's just what I did. So I did low flying down a creek, and I thought I could get under high tension wires. But I missed by 4 inches and took part of the tailplane off. 4 inches higher, I would have got up in a sheet of flame because the props were metal, they weren't raw wood. So I got the shit against. Next morning I was told, I was lucky, I should have your wings taken away from you. But there was a ship leaving Adelaide the next day and it would spoil the roll. So we went back to Adelaide, and the ship was a 9.5-ton old oil tanker, Dutch oil tanker. It was awful. We had to live on the hammocks above the mess table. You had to take the hammocks down before you could eat. Not that anything to eat was very good. They just picked someone out of the to cook. We went through Panama Canal. We nearly got sunk there. They sunk a ship behind us, a timber ship behind us, which I think was meant for us. But although it was an old ship, awful ship, it did have a 25 mile an hour. It was quite good in those days. That was top. And they reckon if you bit zigzagged a bit, the submarines would be able to get you. So anyhow, it was a terrible trip, terrible.
Can I ask you, how did you feel? How did you feel at this point? Like you were a young man.
Yeah.
The other side of the world,
yeah.
You know, it must have been quite exciting.
It was exciting, and the rough work really didn't worry me after being up on the station. You know, I sort of learnt to live with, I didn't expect luxury at all. For instance, the ship we were on 4 days out of Adelaide, the ablution hut at the back where we showered, that got washed overboard. We just had showers there out in the open of salt water. The back was a toilet, just an iron one. You got up one step, there was a bar to hang on to. You got underneath that, you sat on the hole. You might be next to another dozen chaps, cheek to cheek. Water came up and washed everything down. The only fun you had was to getting a bit of newspaper and lighting it and put it down gently on the water to go on everyone's bum. That's the only fun we ever had. So that was a hell of a trip, really. A lot happened there. There was a riot at the Panama Canal, riot with the Chinese crew. But anyhow, we got to England and went to Brighton. Now, Brighton is just a seaside place. There was two hotels, which they stripped. the Grand and the Metropole. We were in the Grand Hotel, just on the floor. They'd taken everything away. There was nothing to do at Brighton. We learned to ice skate. I ice skate reasonably well the time I left there. Everyone did ice skating when they went there. Then after a couple of months, we were transferred to... see, I haven't got my logbook. I've given that to the War Museum at Canberra. So a lot of things... I can't remember. Anyhow, the first... We were there for 3 months flying twin-engine Oxfords, the one that I flew under high tension wire. Flew that for 3 months. Then, if you were good, you were... put onto what they call OTU, I can remember that one, flying Stirlings.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, that was the third one. I've missed one. I forget what it is. We finished up Stirlings. That was a heavy bomber. It was still used in the war, but it was a terrible plane to fly. It was all electric, not hydraulic. And in the 3 months, I can't remember landing on four engines. Always had one engine go off and land on three engines. Anyway, I've cut out one of the places I can't think of. I was then sent to a place, to a hall, to pick a crew. Now, I was late as usual. You actually picked your own crew. I was late as usual, and all of them had been picked except, naturally, one lot. So I had to take them whether I liked them or not. One of them was the navigator. It was at St. Peter's with me, and I didn't like him, and but I had to have him. So anyway, I had the crew.
How many was there in the crew?
There were seven of us all together. Navigator, bomb aimer. He was from Wales. He was quite good, Wales. And a mid-upper gunner and a tail gunner. So we were lucky, very lucky then. We posted to a Lancaster squadron, and it was one of the best squadrons. Well, it was well known because all the top well-known pilots had flown there. There was a mess, how should I put it, a little place called Metheringham, it was Metheringham, Lincolnshire, because it's got to be all flat there, you know, land to take off. So the first flight I did was in the one of the crews that The dam busters. Yeah, there's two planes there we used to fly just for practice in the dam busters. They had the big bit cut out of them where they used to have the bomb. Anyhow, then I started flying myself with the crew, did all night flying, except for one, did all night flying bombing. And I won't go into it all, but the first trip, the navigator made a mistake and we missed the target. And I thought, I can't go back. If you were 20 minutes late, you were supposed to go back, not bomb. But the first trip, I felt a bit self-conscious. So I saw a glow in the left-hand side. I went there. Hamburg, the port of Hamburg, was the second heaviest...
defended?
Yeah. You've got to do this for me. But go there. Heavily defended in Germany. And we went in on our own, got all the searchlights on it. Well, I cut all that short. It was like hell. It was bloody like hell. I got 33 holes in me, in the plane. The bomb bays wouldn't close. They got hit. As we got out, I still don't know today.
How did that affect your manoeuvrability if the bays were...
Oh, yes. You see, it had a little camera in the bomb bay. And if you had to fly straight and level... before it would take the target, take a photo of the gun. If you're over 4 degrees off, it wouldn't take where you bombed, you know? Well, I tell you, I was going like this all. It was terrible. You've got no idea. It was just like hell. When I came out, because the bomb bay wouldn't close, it slowed me up. I got attacked by two fighters. One missed me at the top by... just clipped the top of the astronaut. They always go for the head. I just missed me. I don't know whether you've been told, but when you know the gunners missed it, I was very cross with the gunners. They should have picked it up. You go into a fighter, you don't go away from it. The fighter's there. I could see his helmet, everything was so close. You go into him, and you tell the gunners, I'm going down port, going down port again, up starboard, and you make sort of a corkscrew, and you go back the way you were on track. But it's very hard for the gun, for the fighters to hit you if you're in a proper corkscrew. And then there's a lot of cloud ahead, so I headed for the cloud, and I was right. But I got back, late as hell. They all thought that I would come back, but I did anyhow. That was the worst trip of my life.
How did you feel when you got back to base after that experience?
I remember saying to the chap who interviews you, you've got to go and get tell them all what happened. You know, the gunner's got to tell what happened, everyone. I told him, I said, well, if they're all like that, I'm not going to last long. The funny part is that, and I'm quite serious about this, I enjoyed flying there. I really did. I never got, you know, some people say I was bullshit, but I never got frightened, but I enjoyed it. I was hepped up. Yeah, I enjoyed every bit of it. Anyway, I got through 30 trips. 30 trips, there's only one in three that get through 30 trips. That's genuine, that's honest. So I was lucky to get through the 30 trips, and I was posted as an instructor then.
Sorry, Len, can I just ask you, 30 trips, as time went on and you had more and more accumulating,
yeah.
did your perception of it change? Did you get nervous of the greater number of trips you were doing?
No, I didn't. Some did, because when they got near the 30, if some did, they were frightened, because they got a lot shut that down before they got, just before they got the 30. No, it really didn't worry me. As a matter of fact, I put in to fly another five. You could rent five more, but the navigator said he'd do it, but the crew said they wouldn't. So 31 trips was the finish. But as a place as instructor, as I've told my friend here, we then got, before I left, I was still there for a few days, a word came through from the French that would we do them a favour. Now, you had nothing to do with the French. We didn't have to do anything, they told us anything. But they asked us, there was one town left in France that was heavily defended by the Germans, and he was the, I suppose you'd say the brigadier or whatever he was, he was a bit worried. He didn't want to lose many men near the end of the war. You know what I mean? So he asked us if we'd go over and bomb the place, bomb shit out of it, and then the soldiers could go in. And they wouldn't get, they might lose a few, but not many that way. So I volunteered to go. I didn't have to then because I'd finished, but I volunteered to go over. And at midnight, we dropped hell out of the place and they went in. I did hear later that it worked well. You know, they got congratulations to the squadron, you know, for doing it. So that was good. So that's how I got the French Legion of Honour medal 70 years after. Yeah, I'm called a knight.
Yep.
Over there, which is like a sir over here. You know what I mean? A lot of chaps call me sir just for fun.
Could I just get you to say the name of that medal, Len, nice and slowly?
It was the French Legion of Honour medal. I was a knight of the French Legion of Honour, yeah. I'll show it to you after if you want to see it.
Oh, yes, please, yeah. Did you have any little rituals before you went up in the air?
No, some chaps did. Some chaps too always said, oh, we won't be coming back. Actually, one of my best friends said, I won't be coming back after a trip to Munich. Well, he didn't. He crashed. That's another story, because two of his crew got out only when it was burning. And when the Perspex dome was melting, they had gloves on. He had to pull it away to get out. Had bad burns on it. Why I'm telling you that is because I had taken the chap up a couple of times myself, this particular gunner. Anyhow, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to bore you.
No, you're not at all.
No, not boring you.
You're not at all. This is fantastic. Thank you.
I was on the trip, unfortunately, on the bombing trip to, he'll have to help me out here, Dresden.
Dresden, Germany.
Yeah, where everyone said we should have bombed it. You know, it was a lovely town, old antique stuff there. But a lot of the Germans high-ups were hiding there, you know. So it was a case of having them. I mean, a lot of people, a hell of a lot of people killed. As a matter of fact, not at Dresden, but the one before us, they told me there was 50-odd thousand people got killed. And you do think about that, because two of my friends that parachuted out near that place, the two farmers with a pitchfork, they came up to one of our chaps and killed him with a pitchfork. The other one was not far away, frightened, but the German police came and got him before he was killed. But you can understand how they felt if their town is bombed in flames, perhaps their children are killed. Well, you can understand all that. But it was the same in London. I mean, you know, it was their fault, you might say. They started it.
I suppose a lot of anger and...
Sorry?
A lot of anger and hurt and...
Oh, a lot, yes. Oh, yes, sometimes a German... I can remember a German parachuted over London. He landed in the tree hanging down, and all the women used to hit him with their umbrellas. Yeah, a lot of anger there. My wife, she got bombed out twice, her family. There's one vase up there, the only thing they collected out of the two houses. It's when the buzz bombs came over, you know. A friend of mine from Hull, his job was, he was lucky, he's flying Spitfires. He'd go, and as the buzz bomb was coming over, you'd fly under, with your wing, you'd tip it up. You know what I mean? Like that, so the buzz bomb would go off course, wouldn't bomb in London. Anyhow, enough of that. What's next, Elsa?
Can you tell the buzz bomb? That was fired back from mainland? Or was it fired from the sea?
No, it was a German's answer. Near the end, they knew they were getting beaten. They invented the buzz bomb, and you'd hear it coming. When the engine stopped, they had a timer in it. You see, when the engine stopped, you knew it was going to come down, the bomb. That's what was the frightening part. Well, then after that, they developed that, the big bomb.
The V1 rocket.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The one that just went up, you didn't hear it, and just bombed. Fortunately, that was near the end of the war, so, you know, it didn't do that much damage. But I don't know.
Where was the bomb launched from? From Germany?
Or? Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Well... Germany or one of the places I'd captured, you know, perhaps France or something near the border. I don't know exactly. We were sent to, on one trip to bomb them, but it was under so much concrete. They used to build, the Germans were very good at that. They didn't do much harm to them, actually. We used to do the Dortmund Ems a lot, the canal. They used to... All their German supplies used to come down the canal. And the Dortmund Ems, I bombed that twice at low level. Only did it at low level because the cloud was low level. But when you dropped your cookie, we had then a 10,000-pounder bomb as well as other bombs. And dropped that. When you're about 1,000 feet up, you hit the plane, it would, you know, make the plane go up. Yeah.
Lift.
We did a lot of bombing on the Dortmund Ems Canal, but soon as you bombed it the next day, they'd start mending it. A couple of days, it was back to normal.
It was that quick, was it, the repairs? Eh? The repairs were that fast. Yeah. They were that quick.
Yeah.
I suppose it was vital for them, wasn't it?
Yes, it was vital. It was very vital, that one. That's the thing. A lot of the targets you think are, why did we bomb that? It was very important to them. I only had one daylight bombing, and that was over a place, so I actually had the photograph of where I bombed, but that's gone to the up to Thingbyob as well.
Up to Canberra.
Yeah. I'm not telling you all the dirty bits.
Have you been back to Germany?
Yes, just through it. We did a trip on a bus. I didn't want to go. Muriel wanted to do a bus tour first, before we decided if we want to go overseas again, if we want to stay there. But I never saw, we'll put it this way, I wish when the war ended, I got married in London quickly. I only had a week honeymoon before, married before I had to come back. But I wanted to stay in there and do this dropping food over Germany, things like that, you know, bringing prisoners of war back and that. But that I was posted to come back and fight against the Japanese. The Japanese war was still on, over in London, but still on in Japan. So I was kitted out to do bombing, but I had leave when I got back to Barrow. I came back to Barrow, I had 3 weeks leave. By the time the end of the leave finished, the war ended in Japan too, so I didn't have to fly, thank heavens, over there. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have flown bow fighters.
Okay.
Yeah, I always wanted to fly bow fighters, but I didn't get the chance. I flew 7 different planes altogether.
Do you remember the day?
Sorry?
Remember the day the war ended? Do you remember the day and where were you and how did you feel?
I was in London amongst the mob. Yeah. Mira wasn't with me, but it was. You hear it, see it on TV, you know, it's marvellous, you know, everyone went crazy. Everyone was kissing everyone, and the Yanks, of course, were kissing all the girls. That was a great day, yeah.
A lot of people talk about the Americans and about the confidence of the Americans in general.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They did a good job in lots of ways. They did a good job, they must have. But they were on the last trip that I did, I think it was the last or second last, to bomb a place, we'll put it this way, supposed to be a reasonably easy place to bomb. There wasn't much heavy artillery. That was night, and the Yanks decided to come with us, but the Yanks got lost. They never bombed the place. Yeah, they had a bit of a trouble that way with navigation or something.
Oh, terrific. And just backtracking, Len, a little bit, you mentioned earlier, your base was in Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire, yes. Most of the bombers were up in Lincolnshire because it was a big flat area, you know what I mean? Which you needed to land and to, if you crash on landing. We had, I don't know whether, in my squadron, we had what they call Fido, which was either side of the main runway. There was pipes about that thick, wide, with all holes in. And on the bit of a rise, there was a petrol concrete thing, it's all petrol, where they used to fill up the planes, you know. But they, when there was fog, heavy fog, they reckoned that, I'll put it this way, they'd light these things so you flames on either side of the runway. It was supposed to stop the fog, keep it away up to 50 feet, I think it was. They reckon that you don't get any breeze when there's fog, but you do get a little bit. Sometimes it went like that. See, one of our planes landed on the bloody pipes, of course, went up in flames. I landed on it a couple of times. It was quite good. It was, you know, I found it quite easy myself. I love landing. I like to brag about that because I was a good landing. I was. Twice, which you're not supposed to, went to Norway. That was the longest trip ever done, up to Trondheim in Norway, with submarine pens. And when we got there, we got a message through, don't bomb, because they put a smoke screen out and we might kill our Norwegian allies. So we brought the bombs back. Well, you're supposed to dump them in the sea. You had certain areas in the sea where you could, where the shipping would know it's your bomb. And but I brought the bombs back. Twice that happened. You're supposed to get rid of them, but if you landed, they didn't say with them. Though, they didn't say anything. They were really glad to have them back. But
can I ask you, Len, flying Lancasters? How to you? Can you describe how it felt? How did it feel controlling a Lancaster?
They were the best bomber in the war. They were marvellous. They were. You could nearly loop them. One chap tried to loop one. They were very manoeuvrable. I really loved them. I had the oldest plane to start off with in England, second oldest, Lancaster Ing, A for Able. And the ground, when I got it scrubbed, when I got it finally told the CO, I couldn't get the height to bomb. Going over the Alps, you know, to bomb Munich, I was always 2,000 feet below everyone else and all that. The plane, it was worn out. It was worn out, and he didn't believe it. In the end, I said, "Will you fly it?" So from then, I got new planes all the time. But they're like a new car. There's always some little thing that doesn't work or something goes wrong. But the ground crew, when I got rid of the A for Able, they were on it right from start one. They actually cried. Two of them actually cried because they're with it all the time. I can understand that. But there you go.
And I still need to get your service number too.
422-922-915. I've got it. 422.
Let me write that in.
915. I was the only one with that number because all the South Australians had a different number. My mate and I, my best, very best friend who I miss today, he got killed on his very first trip. That's the way it goes. But we used to forge all the signatures of the adjutant and the different ones and hand into the guard and go on leave, you know, things like that. And when we got back, we got in a hell of a lot of trouble. But it was worth it. It was worth it. You had to have a needle, one of those awful needles. And they always gave it to you just as you're going on leave. And the guy and I said, "No, we're not having it. You've got to have it." He said, "We're not fucking well going to have it." And this, so there's a red mark in my pay book, you know, refusing it. That's you got to carry your stuff into London, you know, to sleep when you're a sergeant, and your arms all sore, you know. They're pretty bright boys. They know when to give it to you. No, I won't. That'll be the lot of son. There's lots of stories I could tell, which are a little bit doubtful.
Okay.
You know, I think they're on the original tape, on some of them. I don't know whether on yours, but.
Okay, well, I'll wrap up then, Len.
Yes, that's okay.
And say, Leonard Pendrell Bence, yeah. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Pleasure, also. Pleasure.
The pleasure's been mine. Thank you so much.
That's all right. What a pleasure.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2020.